So we'll be continuing our study in Hebrews. We'll be looking at the end of chapter 10, and we'll be cruising through chapter 11. You could spend a lot of time in chapter 11 if you wanted to look at each and every example of faith that's given, and then go back into the Old Testament and read about those people. And we're not going to do that. We're going to take it at face value for what it is, the examples that are given to us, and then we'll kind of just cruise through chapter 11 tonight, because there are many examples. But the point he's making in chapter 11 is to reinforce in these Hebrews that are now Christians, that are considering going back to the old law. He's trying to reinforce the importance of endurance and endurance in faith. And so he's encouraging them to endure in their faith, endure in their belief in Christ, and continue to witness Christ to their friends and neighbors, and to continue to live that faithful life. And he commends them for living faithful lives, and gives examples of that. So we'll look at that tonight. Let's get started. All right. So can you all see the slides I have up?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So he starts out in, as you remember, when we left off last week, it was that fourth warning passage, and he said, it is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God. And so now the writer is going to redirect the reader's attention about enduring in their faith. So he says in verse 32, "But remember the former days when, after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly by being made a public spectacle through insults and distress, and partly by becoming companions with those who were so treated." Let's look at those couple of verses for a second. He says, "But remember the former days." So again, let's look at the context here. We have these Christians who were formerly Hebrews who are considering going back to the old law. And he's drawing them back to when they were converted and the excitement that they had and the zeal that they had to do the will of God. He says, "Remember the former days after you were enlightened." And we looked at that term enlightenment, what that means. That is when they have accepted Christ and accepted his blood and accepted the promises that God has made through Christ and his blood. So after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict. So after conversion, these first century readers were persecuted. And he's reminding them, don't forget those events. Don't forget what you've been through. Don't forget all the things that you suffered for faith in Christ. Don't forget what you have accomplished. He says partly that some of these Christians were either literally or figuratively publicly insulted. This doesn't mean that they were put on display in an amphitheater or anything like that, though it could have happened to them. Who knows what kind of suffering that these first century Christians were going through? But figuratively, we can say that once accepting Jesus as Messiah, they were made targets for unbelievers and for their government. And, almost all of the Christians that he's talking to are somewhere in the Roman Empire. And so the Roman government did not take kindly to Christians. And after the rebellion in the 40s and 50s, and then the rebellion that was going to happen in the 70s, the Roman Empire was really persecuting Christians. And so many of these Hebrews that had turned to Christianity suffered for what they had done, suffered for confessing Christ as Lord, and suffered for living the lives as Christians. Some were mistreated because of association. They were mistreated just for visiting Christians in prison. And that's what he's going to go on to say here in just a minute. Just being associated with other Christians was enough for them to be persecuted by friends or family or by their government. He says in verse 34, "For you showed sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better and lasting possession." So he gives them examples of the things that some of them had gone through. These Hebrew Christians showed sympathy toward prisoners and suffered seizure of their property. Prisoners in the Roman Empire were not fed and were generally left to starve in prison. Their only hope was a visiting friend to bring food and clothing. Being a prisoner in a Roman prison was not a fun thing at all. It's not like being a prisoner in the United States of America, where you have cable television and you're fed 3 squares a day, and you have a workout room, and you spend time outside, and you have a library where you can educate yourself. No. Being prisoner in the Roman Empire meant going into a usually underground or in a cave or a closed building, dank cell, probably damp, and generally very uncomfortable. You were not given a bed with a mattress. You were lucky to have anything to sit on in that room. Generally, they would not allow you to, I mean, there was no toilet or anything like that, so you'd deal with all of the processes of the human body and infection. And folks who were in prison for any length of time usually did not live long in the Roman Empire. So these Christians who showed sympathy towards their fellow Christians who were in prison and visited them and brought them food or clothing, they could be imprisoned as sympathizers. Sympathizers of these people who had been imprisoned. And so you were taking your life into your hands just by going to visit people in prison. And seizure of property, as he mentioned in the same verse, could be a result of being branded a sympathizer or of mob looting if you went to prison, not necessarily having your property seized by the government, but you not being there, having your property just overtaken by people knowing that you're not there. And so the writer here is commending the faith of these Hebrews who had turned to Christianity for all of the things they had done to show their faith and the chances they had taken in showing sympathy towards their fellow Christians and being glad to accepting joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better and lasting possession. That idea being that we all understand the fleeting nature of earthly possessions. We know that things break. We know that things just don't last. Doesn't matter what it is. Those things are not forever. We're reminded of what Jesus told us in Matthew chapter 6 and verses 19 through 21, where he said, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, But store up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And again, these Christians were commended for seeking out this heavenly possession, that is, storing up these treasures in heaven, performing these actions, and showing sympathy for their fellow Christians for doing anything they could to demonstrate their faith. And the writer is taking his time to point these things out, to remind them, now that they are questioning whether or not they want to be followers of Christ, he's reminding them of the choice they made and why they made it and how they have profited from it. And many of these people may have suffered since they became Christians. Maybe that was their lot. And so they're questioning whether or not it was even worth it. And he's just reminding them of what has come out of their choice to be Christians, that it's not all about what this world has to offer, because this world is fleeting and it doesn't last, but their heavenly reward awaits them. He says, therefore, the writer has commended them for their past actions, and now he appeals to them in the present. Do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. Don't give in to the reckless rejection of some of the same confidence we have to approach the throne of grace. We looked at that in just earlier in our study last week. He's reminding them not to reject that confidence, that same confidence that would have them approach that throne of grace. Don't throw it away. You've worked so hard for this. Be bold in their witness of Christ and in their response to persecutors. Don't give up on what you've worked so hard for. And he goes on to say, which has a great reward. That word reward there, the Greek misthopodosia, as I try and mispronounce the Greek word, that word means a requital, whether good or bad, a recompense of reward. That word is translated earlier in Hebrews as penalty. So this word that is used as reward is also translated penalty, at Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 2. And it's the correlation between men's deeds in this life and the reward or the punishment to be received in the next. And again, Jesus reminds us of this in Luke chapter 6 and verse 22 and 23, where it says, blessed are you when the people hate you and they exclude you and insult you and scorn your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice on that day and jump for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For their fathers used to treat the prophets the same way. That reward is a motivator and an encouragement to faith. And the writer here is doing his best to encourage these Christians who had given up on Judaism and who are considering going back, encouraging them to endure in their faith because the reward is not worth giving up. The lives they will lead as Christians are not worth giving up. The last four verses are all about this idea of endurance. He says in verse 36, "For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised." And then he quotes from the Old Testament. He says, "For yet in a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one will live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not among those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith for the safekeeping of the soul." So he quotes two different sets of verses in verses 37 and 38. Does anybody have any idea what verses he's quoting there?
Habakkuk.
Habakkuk, right. Chapter 2, verses 2 and 4 is the quote for 37b, the last part of that verse, and all of 38. What's the first part of verse 37 there? What I got out of that was Isaiah 26 and verse 20. It reads, "Come, my people, enter your rooms and close your doors behind you, for hide for a little while until indignation runs its course." And then Habakkuk 2 and verse 2 reads, "Then the Lord answered me and said, write down the vision and inscribe it clearly on the tablets, so that the one who reads it may run. For the vision is yet for the appointed time. It hurries toward the goal and will not fail. Though it delays, wait for it, for it will certainly come and will not delay long. Behold, as for the impudent one, his soul is not right within him, but the righteous one will live by his faith." So he's encouraging endurance. And that's endurance is all about faithfulness. They are synonymous with each other. Because it is impossible to have faith without continuing in it and working to keep it. You have to endure the things that are going to be put before you in order to keep that faith. What good you've done in the past is commendable, but you have to continue. And Christians must be focused on doing the will of God in whatever form that God requires of us. And that's going to be different for each and every one of us. It was different for these people in the first century. It's different for us now. But whatever God has in mind for you and is set before you, you've got to endure. You've got to work towards that and through it. You've got to have the faith to be willing to make it through. Our journey leads to the rest that was promised in chapter 4 and verse 1. That rest that is reserved for his people. And again, he quotes Isaiah 26:30 and Habakkuk 2 verses 2 through 4, which both talk about being patient and enduring. Because you're going to encounter resistance as a Christian. There's just no way around it. If you're going to name the name of Christ, you're going to endure the same kind of strife that Christ endured. He goes on in verse 39 to say, "But we are not among those who shrink back to destruction, but those who have faith for the safekeeping of the soul." So the writer encourages these former Hebrew Christians to endure, to maintain, and to continue in their faith. He includes himself in this. He says, "But we are not among those who shrink back to destruction." He reminds them that they are not among those whose path lead to destruction. Their path is to righteousness, is to their heavenly reward. Faithfulness is the condition upon which salvation is granted. and our faith will preserve our souls. That's a quote from Luke chapter 21 and verse 19. It says, "By your endurance, you will gain your lives." So continue on. Be strong. Endure. Yes, you're going to face hardship. There's no way around that. But endure in the faith. Any comments or questions so far? All right. So digging into chapter 11, starting at verse 1, he's talked about endurance and faith. Now he's going to talk about and give examples of faith. He's going to define not what faith is, but how it's recognized. So he says faith is an assurance. And this word assurance is better used as a title deed. It's something that we know we're going to get. A man who is faithful has a title deed to all God has promised for the future. We look at Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10. It reads, "Do not fear what you are about to suffer. Behold, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison so that you will be tested, and you will have tribulation for 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life." This idea that enduring in our faith is going to lead to reward. That's what that whole last part of Hebrews chapter 10 was all about, was endurance and faith. And now he's telling us what that faith should look like. And he's going to give us an example of people who showed faith. Faith is this assurance, this title deed. We know that God will reward us. We don't have to worry about him backing out on his promise. It's also the conviction of things not seen. Even though we do not have the reward in our hands yet, we are confident that through faith, it is ours. We have no doubt that God will deliver. So it could just as easily be said that we have the reward because that's how sure we are that we're going to have it. He says, "By faith, men of old gained approval." And by faith, we understand no man witnessed the creation, but by faith, we understand that God performed the action. This planet, this solar system, this galaxy, this universe, despite what you hear from all of the super smart scientists that are around, did not blink into existence. This wasn't a big bang of hyper-compressed energy, but God created something from nothing. Everything that is, he created. He didn't reorganize it. He created it. Not only that, when we think of creation, at least as far as we're concerned, we think of working hard at something, making it. What did God do? If we look at, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to advance that slide. If we look at verse 3, it says, "By faith we understand that the world has been created by the word of God, so that what is seen has not been made out of the things which are visible." God spoke this creation into existence. by his word, these things happened. It's hard to wrap your mind around. We know that words are powerful, but our words don't create something from nothing. That's what God did. He spoke it into existence. And by faith, we understand that. The scriptures tell us that we can look at the creation around us and understand that God is there. Understand that He made this. That He's put that into the creation so that there would be no doubt in our minds. Now, men have tried and continue to try to explain things that are not explainable. Because the same question comes back to every explanation of how creation happened. When you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, they'll take you back to this explosion that caused a creation of all of things around us. Where did that come from? And there is no explanation for that. I have no doubt that when God spoke it into existence, it was a massive release of energy. But that's energy that God created. God did it all through His Word. And so the writer, having talked about endurance and faith, having given us this idea of what faith is, now is going to give us examples of faith. And so the rest of chapter 11 is all about examples of faith. And this is organized very well for us to easily understand what we're looking at. It's organized grammatically so that we can see that it starts with pre-flood era. Then it goes to the patriarchal era. Then it goes to the Mosaic era. And then he ends with Jesus. Let's start in chapter 11, read verses 4 through 7. If somebody wants to read Hebrews 11, 4 through 7.
I'll go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Kristen.
All right. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts, and through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he should not see death, and he was not found because God took him up, for he obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who speak or who seek him. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became the heir of the righteousness which is according to faith.
Right. So we have these three examples of faith demonstrated in what they did in their works. Abel's sacrifice. Enoch was pleasing to God. Do you think he just sat around and did nothing? Enoch was pleasing to God because of how he lived his life, because of where his heart was and what he did when he was on this earthly plane. God was pleased by him because of Enoch's faith, because of his demonstration of his faith. Not because he just believed that God was who God said he was, but because he demonstrated that God existed by living a life that was pleasing to God. So pleasing to God that Enoch is one of only two humans that did not die. Who was the other one?
Elijah?
Elijah, right. The only two humans that are recorded in the Bible who did not face death, who went from this life to the next without having to face that. And then Noah, being warned by God, understanding and having that faith in God, willing to listen to what God was telling him, that something was coming that had never been seen before. Something was coming that was going to change the face of the planet. And in reverence, he prepared an ark to save his family. And in doing so, he condemned the world because no other human was saved by that ark except for Noah and his family. All other mammals, that all other creatures that live on the planet, not in the water, died unless they were taken on that ark. And Noah became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. His righteousness was demonstrated by his faith in God and his willingness to show that faith by working to do the things that God had told him to do. So their faith led these men to righteousness, and their righteousness was demonstrated by their works. They put their faith into action. And again, just looking back at what we studied at the end of chapter 10, endurance and faith. And he gives them examples of the things they had done, visiting others in prison, giving up their property, and being happy about it. Those things that demonstrate their faith. All right, our next set of examples is from the patriarchal age. Let's divide this up. This is verses 8 through 22, and I'm going to see. Can I get a volunteer to read verses 8 through 16?
I can read that.
Go ahead.
By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundation, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things decline plainly that they seek a homeland. Declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had an opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. Oh, did I read too far?
You're fine. I was just going to give somebody else a chance to read the last part of that. If somebody
Yes.
wants to pick up verse 17 and read through verse 22.
I can do that.
Go ahead,
By
Aaron.
faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who has received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "In Isaac your descendants shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. By faith, Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshiped, leaning on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. One more.
Nope, that's it.
Okay.
So these are our examples of, these are the examples throughout the patriarchal age. The writer spends much of his time talking about Abraham. That's important because the writer uses Abraham in much of the book of Hebrews, to talk to these Hebrews that have become Christians about how Abraham wasn't under the law that they were under. He wasn't part of that Mosaic law, but he was faithful and he was righteous. We see that the writer talks about Sarah, who was faithful to realize that she would conceive, even though it was well past her time to do so. He talks about how Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, how Jacob blessed Joseph's sons, and how Joseph foretold the Exodus. All of these things done in faith. And he makes a real important point here. He tells us that these people died in faith without receiving the promises, but having seen and welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. These patriarchal fathers and Sarah, as a demonstration of faith, understood that the promise that was given them, even though they never saw it in their lifetime, was as good as done. That those promises were going to be kept by God. And that they didn't have to worry about those promises being fulfilled because they were going to be fulfilled. All of these showing their righteousness in their deeds and their belief in God. Understanding that they were going to receive the promises that God had given them. There's an important thing that we can take out of this. Again, the writer is reminding these Christians that God will fulfill his promise. All of these previous examples of faith had received their promise. Their promise was fulfilled. They had seen it fulfilled in Jesus Christ. There's nothing for them to worry about. There's no reason for them to doubt God's ability to keep his promise. The next part we'll be looking at is chapter 11, verses 24 through 40. And again, we'll divide this up into a couple of readings. If somebody wants to take verses 24 through 33, that kind of ends, let's say 24 through 31. Yeah, 24 through 31. And if somebody can take that, and then somebody take 32 through 40.
I can read the first one.
Okay, go ahead. Thanks, Matt.
By faith, Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith he left Egypt, not being afraid of the anger of the king, for he endured his seeing him who was invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and sprinkled the blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn might not touch them. By faith the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land, but the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. By faith, Rahab the prostitute did not perish with those who were disobedient, because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies.
All right. And somebody read 32 through 40.
And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah of David, and Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, but foreign armies to fight or to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection, and others were tortured, not accepting their release in order that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sewn in two, they were tempted, they were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskin, in goatskin, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. And all of these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they should not be made perfect.
All right. So we have all of these different examples in the Mosaic Age. All of these examples of men and women who lived under the law. He starts with Moses, who was hidden. I forgot to have Matt read verse 23. I left that out. Verse 23 starts off by telling us about how by faith Moses was hidden. By faith his family made sure that he stayed alive, that he would grow up to be the man who God wanted him to be. And then by faith, when he had grown up, he gave up royalty. He left Egypt. By faith, he kept the Passover to protect the people, because the killer of the firstborn would take anybody who did not keep that Passover. By faith, he and the people passed through the Red Sea on dry ground, where the Egyptian army was drowned by the Red Sea when they tried to do the same. By faith, Jericho fell. And what we see from that is Joshua and those who entered the land did what they were told. They were faithful to keep the word of God that they had been given, and to wipe the people out of that land. And we see that the walls of Jericho did not fall in like they were pushed over by the people. They fell outward, as if a force had pushed them from the inside out. And again, all they had to do was follow God's word. We know that Rahab hid the spies. She was protected, and Rahab is in the line of Jesus' descent. That's amazing to me. She was a prostitute, but she's part of the descendancy of Jesus. By faith, the judges did everything that they were able to do. We think of Gideon, who killed so many with so little. And we think of Samuel, not Samuel, Samson, the judge, who we can think of all of the many things he did with his strength. And there are other judges that are named off there as well, and their stories we could look at. Samson and Jephthah. And then he goes on to talk about David, not the first king of Israel, but God's chosen king of Israel, and through whom the bloodline of the rest of the kings came. Saul was the first king, God's first chosen king. But because of his unfaithfulness, no other kings came through his bloodline. But David, as God's chosen king, because of his faithfulness and because he was a man after God's own heart, because he lived his life in faith, righteously looking forward to those things that God had told him would happen, the rest of the bloodline of both kingdoms came through David. Then he talks about Samuel and the prophets, all of those men who lived the lives that he describes there in the latter part of Hebrews chapter 11. These men who performed acts of righteousness, who experienced mocking and flogging, were chained and imprisoned, were stoned, sawn in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and tormented. Many of these prophets who God had lived meager lives as a demonstration to his people that they were not living faithfully. All of these having gained approval through their faith, but none of them received what was promised, but knew that that promise would be fulfilled. None of them saw Jesus. It took 1,500 years of the old law before Jesus showed up on the scene. But all of these had the faith to know that God would fulfill that promise. Because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. The idea being that God had promised them that this was coming, but none of them saw it. But that did not cause their faith to waver. They lived their lives in faith, and they died in faith, being faithful to God and His word, being faithful to what God had told them would come. So they lived in faith. Then finally, Hebrews chapter 12 and verses 1 through 3, we see the perfect example of faith. That is Jesus. It says, therefore, since we have also such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let's rid ourselves of every obstacle and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let's run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking only at Jesus, the originator and perfecter of the faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. This perfect example of faith endured the cross. He is our example of how to weather the storms of life, of how to not grow weary or lose heart, of how to keep our faith full. And we have this great cloud of witnesses that surrounds us, he says. All of these characters from the Old Testament that they know very well. He's talking to Hebrews who had come into Christianity. They knew of all of these characters from the old, of all these men of old, who had been so faithful and who had lived their lives for God. He says, with this cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let's rid ourselves of every obstacle and of the sin which so easily entangles us, and run with endurance the race that is set before us. And again, that race may be different for each and every one of us, but it's important for us to endure, to keep on keeping on, to not let our faith waver, and to understand that that promise is as good as fulfilled. Just like all of these faithful before knew that the promise that God had given was going to lead to fulfillment. They never saw it in their lifetime, but they knew that it was coming. We should have that same faith, knowing that the promises that we've been given will come to pass, that there's nothing that we need to doubt, and that there's no reason for our faith to waver. Any questions or comments?
It's a very hopeful chapter.
Absolutely. As I said last week, I've been looking forward to this chapter for a long time. I love reading through this chapter.
I do
looking
too.
looking at all of these examples of faith. And I think what I love about it the most is so many of these examples of faith are people who failed.
Mm-hmm.
People who had sin in their lives. We're talking about Rahab, an example of faith, and she was a prostitute.
That's what makes it hopeful.
Absolutely. I think all of us can look at these examples and say, you know what? I see in many of these people some of the things I've done wrong in my life. I mean, look at David. I mean, he was a murderer. He took Bathsheba, who was married, and he killed her husband so that he could have her. And he was a man after God's own heart. Now, I'm not saying that God was pleased with him for doing that. God forgave him of that, though, because his heart strove after God. He was sorry for what he did. And we should all remember that we have the ability to have that forgiveness because of Christ. So these examples of faith for me are such a great encouragement for reasons for me to endure. As hard as life might get from time to time, there's always that promise that's standing out there that God will be there. Any other comments or questions?
Thank you for a good lesson, Ted.
Absolutely. Next week, we're going to be starting into Hebrews chapter 12. We'll be looking at, again, he's exhorting these Christians concerning perils that threaten a life of faithfulness. He's going to tell them that not everything's going to be grand, and there are things you're going to have to deal with. Things you're going to have to put up with. Things you're going to have to endure. And so he's going to lead us through that next week. Next week, Dean will be taking the class because it's my week to work. So he'll get at least through this material, and he may get further. So we'll see. But This is the idea for our focus for next week. Thanks so much for everybody for being here tonight. And sorry that the invitation had it set for 7:30. I know some of you joined us a little late, and I apologize for that. I don't think Dean ever means to do that, but it just happens from time to time. And I'm just glad that everybody can be with us tonight.
I just thought that you were working late, so that's why it said 7:30. So I apologize for coming on late.
It's
Thank
not
you,
your
Ted.
Fault at all. Absolutely, Carolyn. And again, the entire lesson was recorded, so it will be up on the website in a little bit once Jerry gets it up there.